Hey, y'all. I'm Waylon, and I'm an alcoholic. For you dudes from down here from Jersey, or up here from Jersey, we appreciate you coming. You had a powerful message, and I appreciate it. When Robbie was speaking last night, and he was talking about involvement and committed, I had a realization. It dawned upon me that I've heard people talking about since I've been in the program a short period of time that I've been here about being duly addicted. And I thought like duly was a truck or something, but duly addicted. But nevertheless, when Robbie was talking about committed and involvement, I said, "Doggone, I'm duly committed." I'm alcoholic, which I'm proud of. I'm a recovering alcoholic, which I'm more proud of. The fact that I've been doing time and, where's John? John's not here. Anyway, John said he did 17 years on installment on life. I've done 33 years flat, John, plus, and still doing time. But when he was talking about that, I said, by golly, here I'm on one side of the fence, the other side of the fence, and I have a vested interest and have had a vested interest in this program way prior to my being in the program, although I needed to be in the program, I'm sure. But so I reckon I'm duly committed, Robbie, but not as committed as that pig you described. Hope to get more committed, but maybe not that much. I've been fortunate since being in the program. Been fortunate to live long enough to get in the program. I had a sponsor. I have a sponsor. Had a temporary sponsor, a good friend of mine. Still a good friend. Still a temporary sponsor. Still a sponsor. But had another guy that came in my life, and Don P. Some of you know him. Some of you know him. I asked him in my office one day if he would consider being my sponsor and working with me. And he kind of smiled, and I didn't know what that meant at the time. And he had a little glint come in his little wicked, beady eyes, and he said, "Yes, sir, Blue. Been waiting for one of you." I didn't know that rascal had served time all over the United States and probably other countries, too, so... And if I'd have seen that picture last night, Don, wherever you are, I'd have never asked you to be my sponsor. You can rest assured you wouldn't have been. What we're here about is carrying the message to those that are less fortunate than us, that are behind the walls and bars or fences or whichever it may be. And I want to play tribute prior to going into what we're about here is what's been attested to and testified to and spoken to last night and today already. Is that there's two kind of folk. That's the caught and the uncaught. I've been fortunate that throughout my life that I've been the uncaught. Should probably have been caught, but the uncaught. In reading and talking with guys that I have worked with, And seeing crime stories, time and time again, the thing of, but for the grace of God, there goes I, has come into play in my mind, in my heart, in many and many occasions. Serving time, There was a movie, I think a movie or a book, Tom, my sale matters don't work real good. And about this thing, but there was a movie or a book, and it said something about the thin line. I really think that for those of us that are serving time, and those of us that are working in the places where those are committed to serve time, I think there's a thin line. I really believe that today. There's just a thin line. They allow me to go home at nights. Maybe they shouldn't even do that. A lot of times I haven't been home at night under my own will and some other wheels, too. But we need you guys and gals. The message that the New Jersey group brought, it was overpowering to me. I sat there in awe and amazement last night and today and listening. And it was, you know, I'm truly grateful that you were here, and I'm truly grateful that I was here to hear what you brought. John, do you do Robbie's hair? He looks like that last night up here, you know, he looked just like that dude in the movie, The Mob or whatever it was, you know, that double-breasted suit, you know. But he's got a good hairdo, Robbie. Nice hairdo. That's why I thought John did it. I think it's our job in prisons to make to allow the meeting, you know. Someone said there's not a vested right this morning. No, there's not. There's not a vested right, but by golly, there's the morality of the thing. There's a thing that we have to do to the other suffering being and do the things that needs to be done. So therefore, to me, that's more powerful than a right that folks have, AA, or that they come into our prisons and our walls. As an administrator, we need you, and we need you. You know, I'm in the program, but it doesn't work. It's kind of a conflict or somehow or another for me trying to bring the message into where I am. It's not as effective, or it's a conflict. I don't know what it is. Folks smarter than I am told me that I shouldn't do that. So I've tried to listen to those folks smarter than I am and let you bring the message. I'll try and carry it somewhere else, okay? But we need to make it's my responsibility to try and make the area as conducive to a meeting as I possibly can within the constraints and the parameters that I have to work with. Now, we only have one panelist up here. We got two more that's going to join us. You know, they haven't jumped ship. They'll be here. I want you to take notice of the makeup of the panel, too, when they get here. We've been sued in North Carolina for everything you can think of and by everybody you can think of. The inmate sues conditions of confinement. Some of you guys spoke to conditions of confinement. We know about that. We've been sued about that, and the courts have told us about that. We've been sued about everything by everybody, and now we've been sued by the federal government. So if any of you folks are undercover feds, you take special notice of this panel when it gets up here. We've been sued because of since 1979 or so, of our treatment of minorities within our workforce, and especially women in corrections. Take special note. Now, if you're not a fed, if you've got friends at feds, tell them. Tell them, so down in North Carolina, them people living right, they're getting with the program. We have rules and rules and rules. You know that. Some of you guys have attested to the fact that you live by our rules. You know, sometimes I think we have rules just for the sake of having rules. Once again, I've been told by those who I think are probably smarter than I am, is that for every rule that we have, some of us made it necessary to have that rule. Either me or you made it necessary that we have that rule. We've got to try and operate by our rules and still have the meeting and allow you to bring the message to us. What I would encourage you to do is work with your sponsor. You know, I can't say here today, I can talk about Sand Hills Youth Center, where I'm superintendent of, where we have 300 youthful offenders. I can sit here and pretty well tell you how we'll do it and how we'll be open and how we'll bend and how we'll flex. I can't tell you that for my partner across the street over there who has Hope Correctional Institution. It's his institution, and we, because of the nature of the different classifications. Mm. You ever been caught in mouth? Worse than a cotton-mouth moccasin, isn't it, Thomas? But anyway, we have to operate differently because in North Carolina, how many have we had at one time? About 103 prisons or 96 or something like that. We operate differently. Work with the inside sponsor. Work with your sponsor. Work with the administrator. Do like ours. Our guy back on the back row, he's got that back row sobriety. Jim W., our main man. He's on second row. Thanks, Jim. Jim has been coming to Sand Hills for a long period of time, and he's bringing the message, and he's doing a heck of a job, and we appreciate you, Jim. But now Jim's the kind of fella, if something's not right, or he's a whiny fella. I belong to the Big Book group, but Doug said that over here in Southern Pines. We meet on Tuesday evenings. Jim W. is also a member of the Big Book group. And for the longest period of time, you know, he stands up and makes that announcement, you know. And, you know, we're carrying the message. We sponsored the facilities. We're carrying the message. And down to Sand Hills, into over to Hoffman. Good meeting. We carry a good meeting. Worst coffee in North Carolina, you know. It just badmouth our coffee if ever. We improved the coffee, didn't we, Jim? We improved the coffee. And then, but if something's wrong, Jim's going to let you know. And I ask you to do the same thing. If there's something wrong or somewhere we can improve the meetings or the environment where it, let us know. Jim came to me one day and he said, Blue, got too many flies and too many roaches. Too many flies and too many roaches. And I told him, I said, Jim, your job's bring the message. You know, maybe that stinking roach is a suffering person and a suffering alcoholic too. You know, just bring the message. So Jim went on back. He's bringing the message. But that's a lie. Y'all know that's a lie. I'm clear that that's a lie. He's still bringing the message. The roach is a lie. He brings the message. But anyway, and on guys that are and we got two or three of the guys here someplace. I don't even recognize them. Where they're camouflaged from me now. But anyway, that's going to go out on CV Lees, and so he comes, talks about the ones that's going to go out. And I welcome that. And I think most inside sponsors and most administrators do welcome that. So we may not get it right, but we'll try. Not mind readers. Absolutely. I failed that stinking course. I wish I'd passed it. But a failed mind reading. If there's a problem, do like Jim does. You know, Jim knows I can't read minds, and he knows I'm not very smart. He comes and tells me, you know, these things. And we try to make the meeting improve as much so as we possibly can. I ask you to do the same thing. We need you. As prison administrators, we need you. As alcoholics, we need you. And especially as those committed into our care, we need you. To keep bringing the message. Now, we have one of our panelists up here, Larry Hinton. He was brave enough to come on up, start with me. And wait a minute, not yet. Not yet. What? Not yet. Not yet. Larry's ready. Larry stays on ready. I'm going to tell you that right now. I need to tell you one thing about Larry before he comes up here. Now, Larry. You know, y'all already knows he's a black man. He wears slum jewelry. You know, all of you that know Larry loves. Have you ever seen a black man with green around his neck and his arms? When Larry goes to the ocean, his neck turns green with that stuff he wears. Larry does such an excellent job at his prison. They closed it 2 weeks ago. That's a fact. Moore Correctional Center is closed. No inmates there. There's a few personnel left there, and they're being shipped out July 1. Larry is one of our panelists, and he's been in programs for a long, long period of time. We've got a little skit they're going to do for you with one of our other panelists down here, and we'll introduce him as we get up here. And but then Larry is going to talk with you. Then Linda's going to, and Conley is she's a cleanup hitter. She's going to clean it all up. So, Larry.
Good morning. My name is Larry. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Larry.
First, I would like to say I'm grateful to be here this morning and to share in the conference. First, we're going to start out with a more of a skit to, in a situation, there's going to be an AA meeting that was canceled at a prison due to inclement weather, and I'm going to go into what some of the other things that is involved within the confines of a prison. Good evening, ladies. I'm sorry to inform you that the AA meeting. I'm sorry to inform you that the AA meeting for today has been canceled due to heavy fog and possible power outage.
That's not possible. We came for a meeting tonight. We've had bad weather before and they've let us meet. Who are you anyway?
My name is Larry Hinton and I'm the program supervisor up here. And I understand what you're saying, but it is Department of Corrections policy to deny a program under severe weather conditions.
But why didn't you call us? We've been around a long time. You do have a volunteers list, don't you?
I would have called you, but I didn't have access to that volunteer listing for Moore Correctional Center.
Well, I don't think this fair. And obviously you're not anybody around here. You would have had a volunteers list. I'm going to talk to your superintendent. Matter of fact, I'm going to talk to your supervisor, and then if I don't get any action, we're going to your superintendent.
I understand what you're saying, and I can sympathize with you, but under the situations, we're doing the best that we can do.
Like I said before, if we don't get any satisfaction, sir, we are talking to your superintendent.
Okay. All right. Unexpected internal problems of custody. This is basically some of the problems that we encounter as prison administrators. Individuals from the streets, there's a lot of times when we realize that you come in to bring the message, and that's the most important thing, and that's the main purpose. But then again, there are internal problems within the prison that a lot of times that we as people coming off the streets, they do not really understand some of the things that we are encountering in the inside dealing with the inmate population. There possibly could have been a fight in the dormitory. We may have had an escape. May have been a work stoppage. Guys said, well, I'm not getting the right amount of mercy gain time, so we're not going to work no more. So everybody stops down, sits down. Matter of fact, we're not going to even serve the population. You got 400 or 500 people to be served that afternoon. They're mad. Everybody's mad. An inmate probably was hurt on the basketball court. And we're short of staff because we do not have transportation to take him to Moore Regional Hospital. There will be times when the OIC, when the officer in charge, will not be able to tell the volunteers coming off the streets what the problems are in the inside of a prison. And there are a lot of situations wherein, and as prison people knowing, as if you ever been in a prison, you never know what's going to happen from one day to the next day. So it's mostly a feeling your way and just hope that everything goes along well. My career stands for 24 years, and I started out as a correction officer at Hope Correction Center and went with the Diagnostic Center down at Rockingham, and I've been up to Carthage for 12 years until they closed the prison. It's been a great experience. And also, I have a lot of, whenever I started at Carthage Prison, we didn't have AA meetings. And I figure about the last last 7 or 8 years, we started having AA meetings. We started out with one AA meeting. And at that time, Waylon Blue Collins, my compadre sitting beside me here, he was the superintendent up there. So, and you know, whenever you're inside of a prison, your custody staff, they always find everything wrong. You know, they say, well, those program people, they just got too many programs. Now, I don't know, and then you know they can always, and then they're going to say, well, Mr. Collins, I don't know what's wrong. Mr. Hinton, you need to talk to him. He got all these people coming in out here, and we got a fellowship meeting going on, we got an AA meeting going on, and then we got NA meeting going on. Now, I don't see how in the world we're going to accommodate all those people. All too many programs. So, Mr. Collins, I talked to Mr. Collins and also with our outside AA sponsor, which is the VAST AA group, and they came in and they asked for a second meeting. You know, those custody people, they ain't like that too good. So, I went to Mr. Collins, me and my outside sponsor, and we said we need another meeting. So, we started a second meeting. Well, we still had too many AA meetings going on. Then we needed a big book night, a closed meeting. So, our AA outside AA sponsor, which is the VAST group, came in and asked if they could have a closed meeting on Thursday nights. So I went to Mr. Collins again. I said, well, we got another problem, Mr. Collins. He said, what is it? I said, the vast group, they want the inmates. Matter of fact, we have a request from the inmates, and also our outside sponsor said that they do not mind and they could fit it into their schedule to have a third meeting. So we ended up with a third meeting, and that was on Sunday nights, Wednesday nights, and Thursday nights. Now, you know the custom staff don't like that because they got too many. Goodness gracious, how many AA meetings we're going to have? That's what they said. So it has been a learning experience, and I have learned along the way, and there's a lot of problems, that internal problems that you don't really know about, and you have to be just as cordial. But at the same time, as our AA leaders from the outside groups, whenever you come into a prison, try to be considerate of the people that work there. And if you have a problem, make sure you don't cause a stink or anything. Call whoever the program supervisor is the next day. We had a good working relationship up at Carthage, and I tell you something that we have tried up there, and it works out real good. Approximately every 3 to 4 months, you need to have a meeting. And it's just a meeting, and sometimes it may not last but 15 or 20 minutes. And what we do, we sit around our outside sponsors, the superintendent, the program people, and we sit around and we talk about the problems that we have. If there's something that we are doing wrong within the inside of the prison, let us know. And we'll do the best that we can to rectify the problem. If there is something that you are doing wrong, something I think that needs to be brought to your attention, I will let you know. And anytime you have a good working relationship like that, the AA meetings can carry on without a whole lot of problems, and you have a good, harmonious working relationship. So I would suggest that, you know, before that, and that was the main reason for the skit before, was to let you know there are problems that are unforeseen problems that we don't know about, and we try to do the best that we can to try to work along with the outside volunteers. And also we realize that after you work a job every day, coming into a facility, it takes a lot out of you. And we understand that because just about everybody in here has a busy schedule. But then again, it's not what we get out of it ourselves, is what we put into it. If we can sit around, and I can sit around my house all day long, and my grass gonna grow up just as high as everything if I don't get out there and use that lawnmower. And what I'm saying is that you whatever you put into something is what you get out of it. So we throughout my AA experiences and anywhere that I work, I'm going to try to do the best I can to accommodate the AA program, and I'm going to see that the people within the inside facilities cooperate with you to the best that we can. And I would like to thank you for everything that you have did for us throughout my career with the corrections department and also my experiences with the AA program.
Thank you, Larry. Our next speaker is Linda Gillis. Is that right? That's good. Also, probably she's not proud of this, but I'll tell it anyway. She's Larry's sister. Yeah. Linda works across the street from where I am at Hope Correctional Institute. Hope Correctional Institute is a medium custody facility housing 600-700 now, Linda, offenders, and she can tell you about that diagnostic center and all this kind of stuff. Larry, the prison that was closed was a medium custody field unit. It's what was way back we called an old 100-man prison field unit. North Carolina's getting bigger and better. You know, our population's going up, and we're building larger prisons. At this time, Linda.
Larry is indeed my brother. I'm proud of him. We come from a family of seven. We come from God-fearing parents that told us that anything was possible. Anything was possible as long as we trust God and trust our fellow man. I need to borrow a slogan from a wise old man who's no longer with us and no longer with my family, who always told us that his slogan of life was my friend. I didn't understand that when I was a young person, because I didn't see everybody as being my friend. My father did. And he would use that slogan with anybody that he met, both entering and both exiting. My friend. I learned what that was all about. I've lived through my life with this message. I find that it helps me. I've worked in the system for 23 years with Moore Regional Hospital and is in the psychiatric unit, and 5 years now with the Department of Correction, presently at Hope Correctional Facility. We house inmates in medium custody, approximately about 650 inmates. We are composed of three areas: south, which is diagnostic. When an inmate enters the system, they go through the diagnostic division. Central, which is composed of regular population, security, and GHNI, which is the mental health facility. There's also north, which is the working population of the area, which the inmates there are housed to come and work for the facility. I shall borrow from Elizabeth Taylor a wise old saying, I'm not going to be here long. She said that in reference to one of her many 8 husbands. Okay. We would like to thank you as volunteers and as workers in the field for all that you do, all that you do to make our jobs worthwhile. Let me tell you a little about us as at Hoke and what we do there. And hopefully, in doing our job, it helps your job to run smoother. We do have volunteers there. We have 100-plus volunteers. They go through a volunteer training program. And I hate microphones. I'm sorry. Coming from a family of 7 kids, I can holler. So, if you didn't, you were outnumbered. Our orientation program is composed of, first, we ask that each volunteer fill out an application. That lets us know that that volunteer is ready to come to work for us. We run pen checks on all our volunteers, and that scares a lot of people in AA, and I don't know why. You know? We are not there to judge what you did. We are here to judge what you're going to do for us. And we don't look at your faults. We look at you, the person, and what you are today. So that pen check should not scare anyone. We encourage you to come on up and volunteer anytime that you would like. You know, if everything that was written down on 3 or 4 sheets of paper that I did in my life, it might be more than 3 or 4 sheets of paper, I'm accountable for everything, but a lot of it's not written down. That pen check, after the pen check, then we have a volunteer program, orientation program, that lasts about 3 hours. We ask each volunteer to go through that program. Each time the volunteer finishes that program, we issue a blue card. Now, once you enter the gate or you come to the gate, all you have to show from then on is your blue card that gains entrance to our prison facility. The officers at the gate are aware of why you're there. They welcome you. Some really don't understand what AA is all about. They think it's for the other fella. You know. But it's not. We are accountable and responsible. We are certified officers, so therefore we have a dual job. Some things that we do, we don't like to do because we trust our volunteers, but they're part of the program. They're part of our responsibility with the Department of Correction. So therefore, when you come in, we ask that you don't bring your purse. We ask that you do bring an ID, but since you have, we've replaced them with the blue cards. That's all you need. And we ask that you carry the message of AA. That you enter, give the message, don't take anything out other than the message of the joy that you receive there. Now, we have some inmates, and just a few, that might ask you to take some things out, you know? And especially if you're a homeboy. You know, stop by Mom's house and ask her to send me a few dollars. Can you take this to the post office? I missed the mail today. Or they might even ask you, sir, you got a match. You ask, well, do you have a cigarette? You know, a match goes with a cigarette. So then if you give that, now do you have just a few dollars? I know, man, you work, brother man, and you my brother, and I need a few dollars. You know, this sister don't pay me but 70 cents a day, and you know 70 cents don't last. So please give me just a few dollars. Man, I won't tell nobody. So we don't do that. No, volunteers don't do that because they know that we open up our pocketbooks for one, bro, man gonna go back and tell his bro, and you got 650 brothers that you can back up. Can you give that many dollars? So therefore, we don't do it. We as volunteers say, absolutely not. I'm sorry. My rules and regulations tell me I cannot do that for you. Then we have our ladies. We love lady volunteers. Our guys do too. The reason that we have the orientation program is to enlighten our ladies that sometimes we have to, in order to be ladies, it just doesn't happen to be that we are pretty. It doesn't happen to be that we have a nice figure. There are other things that we go along with that, and that's your dress. We ask that you come properly dressed. Properly dressed meaning that you're fully clothed. Okay? And that doesn't mean in stockings and a short skirt, you know. We don't want anything to happen in our privilege that we cannot control. So therefore, if we entice somebody, and we don't care to do that, sometimes we do, we don't want to start anything that we can't finish. So therefore, we ask that you come appropriately dressed. And our volunteers, we usually don't have a problem with this. Sometimes we might have to take a person off, and that's a rarity. That's a rarity. We work with professional AA people, and they know how to carry themselves. But that's one of the things that we as correctional facilities have to deal with. The touching. Oh, we in AA love to touch, don't we? It gives you a good feeling. It's a nice, warm, fuzzy that says, hey, how you doing? I'm glad you're here. I'm glad I'm here. And you did a good job. We have what we call in our prison appropriate touching. And that's a handshake, or maybe a pat on the back, and even a hug. You have to do it your own discretion. You know when something's inappropriate and not, and we respect our AA folks to draw a line when it's inappropriate. And you can get inappropriate behavior from males, guys. Okay. We consider our volunteers some of the finest in the state. I don't know about New Jersey or some of the other places that are here, but we enjoy them. They are great. These inmates say to us many, many times how much they appreciate you. I did not realize what an inmate was saying to me one day when he said, Miss Gillis, I'm serving 30 years to life, and I thank God for the Department of Correction. I thought, my God, you thank God for 30 years? And he said, yes, Miss Gillis, I killed a person. I was intoxicated. I lost a life I cannot replace. I could not give it, and I cannot replace it. But thanks to Department of Correction and thanks to imprisonment, I've learned. But a father's thanks that that person gave me was thanks to these people coming here, because I've learned about me. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. And I know if I go back out there and put those substances back in my body, I might kill again. And if I stayed out there and did not get this time, I would have killed again. I've learned what that is. I've learned that an address can be U.S. 1 Bridge. Did y'all know that? How many inmates that we bring into the system lived on the bridge? They thank God for 3 square meals a day and you. You've taught them that without that substance, they can be a better person and gain control of their lives. So we thank you again. There's many messages that the inmates give to us that I'm sure you receive in your jobs that tell you that they're grateful that you come every day bringing the message of AA. I borrow again from a great man who's again my father. When he couldn't say anything else, 7 kids had outnumbered him in requests. He would say, "Let us pray." Give yourselves a hand, please. You volunteers for us, bringing the message for those that we treat and we control or we secure. We appreciate you. Anytime that you need us, we definitely need you. Just give us a holler. Any problems that you have, and like Mr. Collins said, we do make mistakes. I think I've counted 3 in my past. Unlike Elizabeth Taylor, I think she's had 8 now, and if you're interested, I understand that she is looking for 9. I'll give you her address after this session. It is great to be here, to be among the finest in the world, I should say. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. You know, the previous panel, and John was doing the moderation or the chairing, I tried to remember all he said and all that went on up here, but I found out that I couldn't, and little tidbits keep coming back. I remember one thing when I was sitting there looking at, I believe it's Joey right behind Thomas. Is that Joey? Is that right? Yeah, Joey. I remember John saying that Joey was a Section 2. Y'all remember something about that? A Section 2. I was in the military. They kept trying to give me a Section 8. I just wonder if is that 6 plus is... Is that what a section, you know, get 6 more and you're a Section 8? I don't know. Thank you, Linda. Fine job. The only thing I can say to what Linda said is amen. Her being proud of Larry, I'm proud of Larry too. He's, you know, in spite of all, I'm still proud of Larry. Our next speaker, Conley Morgan, has a 10 or 12 years or so in corrections, pretty diversified. She's never served any time. She might have needed to serve time like I probably needed to serve time if I'd have been caught. However, she's had experience in the women's facilities on the boot camp. She was a program supervisor at our MPAC, our boot camp, and now is working over with us at Sand Hills Youth Center, and maybe some more she'll tell you. Kindly, don't talk about the roof.
First of all, I have an aversion to these. Can you hear me out there? You cannot. I have a real. Okay. I have a real aversion to these things. And I cannot believe my supervisor sits here and talks about roaches after he tells me not to talk about roaches. And so I'm not going to say anything else about the roaches. I am having a slight asthma attack. I was sitting up here listening to all these folks. And they did a great job. And I looked out, and I brought 3 wonderful young men with me here today from our unit, and I only saw 2. And I kept looking. I said, "Oh, God, please let him have to go to the bathroom or something." And I did see him come back in. Thank you, Adam. You scared me to death, son. I knew you'd be here with me, though. You're supposed to support me. Okay. I don't know that I can add anything any better than what these folks have already said. I want to do a lot of thanking. I think from what I've heard from a lot of folks in the prison system, I have a great thing going on there as far as AA in our unit. Has Jim, you're back, are you back there, Jim? Okay, I'm probably going to embarrass Jim a little bit. I see him, Bat Road Baptist. I just can't say enough about Jim. I'm not a very eloquent speaker, but I almost feel that Jim's a member of the staff there. I don't worry about things when Jim is there. When Jim isn't there, I worry. He is always there. If he can't be there, he calls. I don't worry about guys misbehaving too very much. I think the guys that I brought here would probably love to be up here and say a lot of nice things about you too. And I just want to say in public, we really do appreciate you, no matter how mean I get with that Army experience sometimes. But you know we love you, and we're certainly happy to have you there. If everybody could be like Jim, we wouldn't have any problems. That's the way I feel, truly. I want to talk a little bit about Don.
I don't think we can stand any more Jim.
I have been with the DOC for 12 years, and I've been in two female units, two male units. One does include the impact unit. And I have worked with a lot of folks in Don P's position. Well, that's not correct. I've worked in a lot of units that have people like John P. there. I have not worked with them. I want to embarrass you a little bit, too, back there. You have meant a heck of a lot to me, and I'm going to try not to get emotional. You call me back. It's absolutely amazing. Some folks never would call me back, but I worry him to death, and he worries me to death at times, too. So thanks a lot. Appreciate it. This always happens when I talk to people about substance abuse. I always get emotional, and I'll tell you why. I'm the daughter of, the ex-wife of, the aunt of, the niece of alcoholics. So I tried my damnedest to be an alcoholic. I tried and tried for about 6 or 9 months, and it just didn't work for me. So I felt I am really a failure here. So Mr. Collins is right, and don't sit back there and cry. I can't take it now. I did. So he told the truth. I tried in my college years to be an alcoholic, and it made me so sick, thank God. Three girls, I'm the middle. None of us have drinking problems. We're little nuts in all other kind of ways, but we don't have drinking problems. So I kind of feel like a part of the group here. And as Mr. Collins said, I've been driving drunk in my life. Don't you inmates go back and tell everybody this either. And it's happened, you know. I've been lucky. I don't have that. I don't think I ever had a problem, but anyway. I feel like I have a real good feeling about how you folks feel anyway. As far as the volunteer role in my prison, all I ask is that Jim comes there, and if he can bring another volunteer with him, that's great. And as I said, Jim and the guys in the group are in charge of that group. I try not to interfere any more than I have to. We have Jim, I think, has 4 C's and an F. We have continuity because we have Jim. We have a very caring person in Jim. We certainly have communication with Jim. We have a lot of cooperation and a hell of a lot of flexibility. A whole heck of a lot of that. I don't know what else I can say. These folks have covered everything just greatly, and I thought I was the cleanup person. And you guys, it's only 20 to 12. I thought sure Mr. Collins would speak longer than that. He surprised me.
I saved a few things.
Okay, so good. I'm going to finish. I do want to say a big thank you to the three guys that I brought up, so I'm going to embarrass them. I take this thing real seriously. They know that. They've seen me cry at AA meetings, so they know I take this thing real seriously. And without these guys helping me, they don't know. They do a lot of things to help me out. So I want to thank you. You're the reason we're here anyway, so remember that. That's all that I really have to say. Jim could use some help. He's the only person that we have. I've been there 4 years, and he's the only person that we've really had for any amount of time. And I'm sure he'd like to have a little bit of help. He comes out on Sunday nights and Thursday nights. So if there are any volunteers in the house, please see Jim or see me. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Collins. I think I've done enough damage. Okay? Thanks a lot.
Thanks kindly.
You
did a fine job. You didn't talk about roaches, and we were going with that. finally spotted our three guys, and I also seen that one was gone. I seen him when he went out, and I seen him make a right turn. I knew where I thought he was going. There wasn't a door over there. Conley said, wasn't anything to worry about. Adam was okay. I was watching him. This is not Jim Day. It sounded like Jim Day, didn't it? Jim, who. One thing I will say about him, he has the silliest laugh I've ever heard. If we can ever can it, I got a cousin sitting there. Your cousin, you ever heard him? That laugh. Oh, I'll do it for you. Whatever it is, Jim, what's your name? Jim. You know, if we can can it, we're going to exploit it, and we're going to get rich from that canned laughter of Jim's. But he does do a good job. Now, you know, the one thing that I thought there would be long-windeder than they are, and expounding a tad on what Linda said, and I think our Secretary of Corrections, Franklin Freeman, says it better, is that he says that, you know, when he starts a speech, that he's going to do what Henry VIII told his wives and what Liz Taylor told her husbands, and I'll not keep you long. So we're going to not keep you very much longer. We're going to give you some time here to ask some questions. But the thing that I would like to just follow up with, and I started to do earlier, I was afraid it would run out of time, and I didn't want to shortcut the panel, these guys and gals here, is that I've been a prison administrator of such for, you know, working in prisons for 33-plus years now. I have been a prison administrator a lot longer than I have been in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My temporary sponsor, whom a lot of you know, that's the flower child in the purple shirt right down here, Thomas Fern picked that shirt out, I know. It's pretty. My wife likes purple. But I didn't realize what he was, but, you know, Tom and I worked together years and years ago, 20 years or more ago, about 1970, 71, along in there. And I was well into practicing, you know, what I enjoyed doing, drinking. And I just like, I think it was John said, Robbie, I enjoyed drinking for a long, long time. I really did. I liked the lights and fun and what went on with it. But I was well into practicing my drinking. I hadn't perfected it quite yet, and I wasn't ready to give it up. I remember one day we were down at the gas pumps. Thomas said something to me about stopping drinking or something absurd like that, you know. I said, yeah, Tom, I've quit. I had it that time. It was one of the many times I had quit drinking. Believe it or not, I had quit, and I was on the wagon. He said, how long have you quit, Blue? I said, forever. Never, ever am I going to take another drink. How you doing it, Blue? I said, willpower, you know. He said, Blue, old Will will get on a mule and ride away if you're not careful. He did. I didn't realize it until years later when I called him from treatment that he was trying 12-step me then. He did a feeble attempt at it, but he was trying 12-step me then. I knew what he was doing, you know. But I've had a history. God dog it, I could quit drinking, and like so many other folk, I couldn't stay quit. I absolutely couldn't stay quit. By golly, I could quit for a day, and I have quit for 2 years plus. But I went back. Didn't know why. Didn't make any difference what the reason for it was. And looking back, the times when I had some long dryness, never sobriety, long dryness, I always planned, Dwayne, when I'd start back drinking. You believe that? I always did. I remember the time that we had the New Year's Eve party when we were working together. I had been dry like 2 years. That day, I planned to drink that night. Of all the stupid stuff, I didn't think it was any big thing. I could quit again. I did. I did quit again. But I had a habit of falling off the wagon. I'm going to tell you about falling off the wagon, because I have fell off the wagon all my life. Before I ever took the first drink, I fell off the wagon, literally. I was raised a farm kid here in North Carolina, which most of my folks were, you know, the fancy name were farmers and farming on hays. The common name were sharecroppers. That's all, bottom line. Farmed on hays, you know. End of the year, we had a bunch of debts, and we'd go in debt for another year. Dad was a farmer, sharecropper. He quit that, praise God, and went to work with the prison department, Tom. Sure did. Thank the Lord for the prison department. Got me out of that farm. Cotton field. Everybody been to cotton field in the back field? Ain't fun. But anyway, we were over in my two older brothers. I was only about 4 or 5 years old, and we was over in the piney fields. John was talking about the piney fields in New Jersey. We were over in the piney fields gathering, getting some pine straw, and I was just along for the ride on the wagon, the horse wagon, live horse. Whoa, giddy up, wagon, you know. And being a little mischievous dude that I was, I didn't sit on the cedar in the wagon like that. I had to sit up there on that banister right up at the front. That wagon hit a stump. I fell over, and the wagon ran over my head. Right over my head. So I started falling off the wagon before I ever took the first drink. I never quit falling off the wagon from 4 or 5 years, whatever it was. My brothers know I don't know how old it was. Until, I hope, was the last time I fell off the wagon at age 55. Age 55. Had been on a drinking binge, got into trouble. Asked my wife to help me kind of get decent. Went to treatment. Best decision ever made. Let me have this. I used to drink liquor behind people. I'm not above drinking a drink of water behind somebody. Hope to God whoever had that water didn't have that frothy mouth stuff, you know, whatever it was. But anyway, in a suffering, hurting, drunken state of mind, probably made the best decision I have ever made in my adult life, or my life. Since that time, which was March 6, 93, I'm just a newcomer. I was also a late bloomer. I heard Joey or somebody talking about being a late bloomer. Me too, real late. I bloom brightly, though. But since that time, I've been a superintendent, and some folks call them wardens, and some call them chain gang guards, and everything you can think of, you know. But since 1973, got sober, and really got sober and found sobriety and recovery in 93. So I've been a prison superintendent or administrator for 20 years, now 25 or whatever it is, and 73, 93, 95, 96, don't count very well. But, you know, the bottom line is that since I have found the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, since I have been in the program this short period of time that I have and tried to work the steps, God knows, you know, you got a sponsor like mine, you're going to have to try and work those steps. You know, he breathes steps at you. But since I'm trying, I haven't done a real good job at it. But, you know, I'm trying, and I'm going to keep trying, Don. Yeah. When you leave, I'm going to keep trying. But anyway, there's no doubt in my mind that I'm a better prison administrator today because of this program. There's no doubt in my mind that I'm also a better husband today because of this program. There's no doubt in my mind that I'm a better father figure because of this program. I can think of absolutely nothing that I'm not better at than I was some time ago. Nothing at all because of this program. Because of this program and you folk. And for our institutions, I don't know if any of you, I don't do much reading. I read some, kind of like Will Rogers, though. I think he said, you know, all I know is when I read in the papers. I don't know if any of you did a lot of reading or not, and I don't know if this is true what I'm fixing to say is, but I've been told and I've read that in law enforcement profession, in our profession in corrections, that alcoholism and suicide rate is among the highest. That's one of the most highest professions. You know, when you folks said that were... Well, I think maybe if you're here, you were fortunate enough that you got caught, maybe. But anyway, whatever the difference was, that I was on one side of the fence and you were there on the other side of the fence. I forgot what I was going to say. Keep coming back. I'm going to try to do that. Well, I lost that one. fleeting, gone. Oh, I know. I got it. Thank God. You know, I said talk about a thin line, you know. Well, there's no doubt in my mind, you know, I went in Central Prison as a prison employee visitor. I had the uniform on, you know, I was an officer or a sergeant or something like that. I started off as an officer and came through the ranks. And I remember when that metal gate clanged behind me, guys and gals, you know, God, I had a uniform. I could come back out. That was an awful sound, I'm telling you. I didn't like it. And me being supposedly, I said, what the heck, they don't let me back out, you know. Well, that was the first time in. I didn't never go in there too many times. I never liked that place. But anyway, there's stress behind those walls. You know it and I know it. Behind those fences and in those cells. But there's also stress with the folks that work and live there, you know. 8 hours at a time, or some of us were foolish enough, we did 12 and 16 hours and stayed home. Think maybe that's, you know, that's why maybe, you know, with stress and all the, you know, alcoholism rate is so high in our profession, and suicidal rate is so high. I did that alcoholism thing in there in our profession. I'm one of the statistics. I'm going to try not to be that suicidal statistic. And if you folks keep coming back, and if you keep letting me get in your rooms, I'm going to try to let that one statistic, suicidal on this one prison employee professional, be null and void, you know. I want to thank you again for allowing us to be here. Now we've got just a few minutes. If there's any questions, we'll try and entertain them. Don't promise we can give you an answer. We'll try. And here in North Carolina, we're diversified with our prison structure, and we have different kind of prisons and different kind of units according to where you are, what the custody classification is, or the work release minimum custody, maximum custody, or whatever it might be. So you need to work with the person, your sponsors at the prison. One other thing, let me tell you about the sponsor. Jack's not here, don't think. Mother, it was our outside sponsor when I was up at Moore Correctional Center. He and our other outside sponsor that Larry was talking about, Pat S., came in one day. We were going to have one of the meetings, and I think it was one of the meetings about adding on another AA meeting at Moore. I was still practicing at the time, and I had practiced hard the night before. I had really practiced hard the night before. I knew good. I said, these people are not crazy. They know I'm sitting here about half stewed. You know, I'm hurting, but they were real nice. You know, they didn't let on like they thought I had ever took a drink in my life, you know. But it was after I got in the program, Jack told me one day, he said, well, I said, I need to tell you something. He said, I remember one day when I saw you and you were needing a drink as bad as any SOB that I have ever seen in my life. I told him, I said, Jack, not only do you remember that, by golly, I remember it too, and you're right. You're right. But you know, the work with the inside sponsor. I don't think there's too many things that we can't overcome if we work this thing together. It's a needed thing. We've got to have it. And it's been said over and over again, you know, if it's only one, no matter why they come, if it's only one that gets the message and sticks with them, by golly, it's worth the effort. You know, I've heard it described as throwing mud up on the wall. Some of it will stick, some of it will run off. If the guys ever need the help, you know, maybe they didn't pay attention to the business part. Maybe they did come to get the cookie. Maybe they did come to see the female. Now, we can fill up a room if we bring us a female. I guarantee you we can fill that room up. But maybe it was because they just come because the female was present. If I was a male in prison as a female there, by golly, I'd be there. If they wanted me to pass out litter to or be a Hindu or whatever, I'd probably show up, you know. But no matter how it gets the message, if it sticks and some of it stays there, then whenever the person, you know, and as we all know, AA is not for everybody that needs it. It's only for those who want it. And whenever they want it, you know, they know how to find us, okay? We'll entertain your questions if you have any at this time. Yes, ma'am?
Hi, Marvin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Marvin.
Did I understand you correctly, Linda, that when there is
the system being...
The system being...
We try to handle it internally with the sponsor. There's an inside sponsor, which is that program person. And we try to handle it with that person and with that AA volunteer at that time. Yes. No, 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 no. No, not at all. And we do so very respectfully. We do have problems, and we hope that we can iron those things out and go forth. We don't even, there has been some situations where we've had to pull blue cards. We do so very reluctantly in doing that. We try to work with the problem at that time and iron it out and then go forth with that volunteer. I can't say about that situation, ma'am. What would have happened in my prison and working under my leadership is that hopefully with having an open door policy for my volunteers, they would have brought that to my attention. And then I would, in all probability, knowing me, I would have pulled that inmate aside and say, we're having some inappropriate behavior and we really need to work on this. You know, our guys are there for doing things wrongly, and we are there to help teach, and not to we're not there to punish either. They're there because they've punished themselves. Okay, so we try to help teach them and show them right, and then we would put that person back in and hope that thing would never happen again, that situation. But like we say, each facility handles things differently. That would be what would happen under my leadership, ma'am.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, the thing that I have observed is that, and the AA program is a good one to, as an example, Tom, is that if there is something viable, if there's a program, if a person, he or she, inmate, is involved in something that is constructive and meaningful to them, that is going to be a better population or a better behaved, if that's what your question is, than one where it's just, you know, it's kind of loose fit and running gun and it's just a cops and robbers type thing. And, you know, and the officers and correctional officers and programmers are there just for I got you and I get you and the write-up thing and not the helping attitude. My experience has been if people are involved, and not only in prisons but out here too, me too, if people are involved in something that's meaningful in their life, makes sense, then they're going to be better citizens or better behaved, or abide by what constraints we have, whether it's the laws of the land or whether it's the rules and regulations of the prison, but we're going to do what we need to do to get the most out of that. Now, am I getting to anywhere at all? I have been in places, you know, when I first came to work, and Thomas too, when Thomas in alcoholic rehabilitation, first time I ever seen him, you know, he was a strange cat then, still is. But I was an officer, a sergeant, first time I think I saw you, yeah. If you'd have come to our prison gates at that time, then that was in 62, 3, 4, long in there, God almighty, you'd have scared us to death. We didn't want no volunteers in our prisons. You know, we wanted to say the old adage of out of sight, out of mind. We were out of sight and out of mind. Yeah. We had a school teacher, never forget it. I was at Scotland County, medium custody, one of those 100-man units, medium custody, armed supervision, all that. We had a school teacher that would come in on Saturday morning for about 3 or 4 hours. We had a half dozen or so guys that if they wanted to, would go out there and try to work on ABE on a blackboard. About the third, it seemed like it was the third Sunday, we had preaching. That's about what we had. You know, we didn't have anything else. We had, you know, lock up, go feed, shuffle the gate, you know, go to work, come back, go to the cell block, go to work, play ball in the yard, what little time we allowed them out there. Tough time. It was not only tough time on those serving time, it was tough time on those that was working in the prison. It's hard time for an inmate makes it hard time for us. You know, it's just, if it's hard time, people talking about freely prisons now. God, there's no such thing as a freely prison. I've never seen a freely prison. Tom, we were accused of running a country club at Sanford. They take that dude and you said to you in a country club and you take him there and you say, buddy, you're going to stay here with us 6 months or 8 months or 9 months. You can't go home. That takes the frills off, doesn't it? Ain't no country club anymore. Country club, you go play golf and you have a few drinks, you go home. We don't let you do that. So our legislators in North Carolina now are some of them, and I'm not being political, but just the truth of the matter. And I'm as the old boy said, I'm fireproof. I've got my retirement time in, so don't care if politicians here or not. But when they start talking about freely prisons, hell, there's not a freely prison. You know, let that legislator come serve a couple of 3 days in that freely prison. Ain't no such thing. You know, we got to treat people humane, and we got to offer them the opportunity to take advantage of the program. You know, if you throw the mud on the ball, make him in there, let him go in there, let him see the what. Maybe it'll stick in his ear, his eye, or run out, whatever it goes. But give him the opportunity. Just like we have in AA. You know, I had the choice from the time, I was practicing my art, getting that thing down to a fine art for a long time. I had the choice, didn't we, John? We had the choice. We didn't take it, you know. John was on he's making them little installment plans. I'm in there serving that life one day at a time. I'm doing it flat. John gets little work credits off, you know. But both of us got the same deal going. Didn't either one of us take advantage of it. It was our force, wasn't it? And that's what I say, you know, put it in our prisons or wherever it is out here, if it's there for us, we got the choice of taking it. But by God, it's our responsibility to have it there for them. It's our responsibility to have it there for them in a fitting and humane way and as best we can. And Marge, getting back to your question, I couldn't answer your question. I know how I would have handled it at Sand Hills. And that's why I encourage you at the beginning. If when problems come up, then you're going to, because of the different, you know, the 100 prisons so that we have in North Carolina, you're going to have to work with that particular prison. We got the same book that we go by. We interpret it differently. And we flex differently. So, I could tell you what we'd do at Sand Hills in a heartbeat, you know. But I can't tell you what we'd have done across the street in Linda's prison or at Moore County, you know. Work with the people there. Thomas, I probably muddied the water bad.
Let me just address Tom's question. There's a professor at North Carolina Central that worked served 11 years with the Department of Correction. And he said to me that there were many programs there in the Department of Correction during my time there. Without those programs, I would not be where I am today. He later went on to get his master's. But he said with those programs, it took 10 years, Miss Gillis, for me to realize that those programs had a value for me. So I guess we have to figure out whether those programs have a value for us. Without that exposure, we would never find that out. So that's why we need programs.
One last question.
Mm-hmm.
And in a prison, something of that nature is stronger than anything we can carry. Them participating in them doing that is stronger than anything
yeah.
we can
carry. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We run into problems. We've got authorization to take several women into the prison to be volunteers, but they've dropped the staff, so we can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And the whole theme of the thing, once again, I think, is that you know, individually we can do nothing, absolutely nothing, but if we work together, we can overcome most obstacles just by working together and having the program, you know, of Alcoholics Anonymous that we need inside the walls. I think that's we're out of time. Conley got long-winded and run us over. I appreciate being able to be here. I appreciate Don and Tom, you guys inviting me. I've enjoyed it. I really appreciate you guys from Joycey. And you know, I don't care if it's up yonder or down yonder or sideways or where that Mason-Dixon line is. It's all people, isn't it? Doesn't make any difference if you say "use guys" or "y'all." But keep on doing what you're doing. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.